Hi, this is M. Greiner, and you're listening to 93.3 CFMU.
Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show, the champions, the local comic book shop, broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station.
Thanks to us.
Yes, thanks to us. And podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I'm Walter DeRaglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College. And also today on the podcast or on the radio show, we have a very, very special guest here. We're very proud to have the illustrious, the well-known, famous Scott Vanderplug.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Editor-in-chief of Comic Book Daily.
Editor-in-chief of Comic Book Daily. And, you know, professor, could be a professor of smoked meats, I'm sure. Charcuterie. Thank you.
Yeah. Scott's got the toughest job in the world, being the editor of Comic Book Daily.
He has to listen to you all the time.
So well, I don't know. He has to just, he's got to take just, you know, crap people send them and turn it into something printable or what's it called?
Spin it into gold.
Wait, what is it called when you put it online? Printable?
Postable.
A postable, right. So that's Scott's job.
Yeah.
But Scott, thanks for joining the show. So we're going to start the show, Scott, like we do every week. I was going to ask Scott to bring some sponsors, but I figured I got to him too late. We're going to start the show like we do every week, where Chris Owen talks about comics that are hitting the new this week stands at your local comic book shop.
All right,
we have a sponsor, and today's sponsor for new this week is brought to you by Jelen Pivo Club Soda, the pride of Serbia. Jelen Pivo Club Soda is the best club soda. That's what it says right here on the sheet thing.
I don't even know if I can pronounce that.
Jelen is Pivo is Pivo's
Pivo?
Beer.
Oh.
I mean, not beer, club soda. Yeah. What am I saying? I got this totally wrong.
I'm pretty sure Walt can pronounce it, so I don't think you have to worry about it.
Pivo is translated into club soda.
Oh, okay, okay. So, good to know. Yeah. Good to know. All right. Well, as you said, every week we like to peruse the comic book racks and talk about new comics that are on the newsstands today. And I'd be remiss if I went this week without talking about the fact that Captain America number 700 has come out this week.
Hold on.
700.
Stop the presses.
Stop the presses.
Stop the presses.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to later talk about Action number 1000.
We will, yes.
There's been all kinds of talk and hype around Spider-Man 800.
Sure.
I'm a comic shop owner. I know what's going on. How come I didn't even know Captain America 700 was coming out?
You know, I don't want to be mean, Walt, but you can fill a warehouse with what you don't know. I'm not trying to say anything.
That's mean.
But you know what? The reality of it is, here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
I'm sorry. Do I really have to add to that?
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Thank you.
That wasn't mentioned before.
He's a quick study.
quick learner.
This is Scott Vanderpool guy.
Spider-Man's always been, you know, the showrunner of Marvel, right?
Right.
Like it's
right.
It always usurps all the other
Everybody
titles.
Else. Uh-huh.
So I'm not surprised that you don't know the fact that Captain America 700.
Is there anything special about it?
It really
is an exercise.
That's the last issue of that creative team.
Last issue of Mark Waid is leaving the book.
Where's he going? To FF, right?
He's, no? I believe so. Yes.
I don't know. There's some new FF thing going on.
I think it is FF, yes. Yep. Oh, all the creative teams are switching around. Dan Slott's going to eventually to Iron Man. So everything's getting switched around.
So what do you think of that, by the way, while we're on that topic?
What's that?
So this creative dance, like musical chairs.
You know,
everybody sits in their comic title for a year and a half at best.
Well, you know,
and then they move on.
There's nothing new there, right? Like that happened years ago.
I don't know. In the old days, you had creative teams for decades.
Okay.
Well, not still, decades, maybe not but decades, a decade.
But, you know, I think the longest running creative team was... what's his name? Brian Michael Bendis and that other guy Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, Bagley?
Mark Bagley, I think they were on like for 150 some odd issues or something like that. I think that's the longest team that's ever been around.
Right.
Continuously.
Right. Yep.
You know, but that's kind of a rarity these days though, right? I mean, usually things get switched up quite a bit. I don't know. What do you think, Scott?
I agree. Well, what's that? The Invincible had a good run too.
Invincible had a good run.
It was Kirkman's run, but
yeah.
Well, what comes to mind is the long creative teams, right? We don't even give a thought to though the creative teams that lasted a year or 2 years.
Yeah. No, you're right.
You stick with the big runs.
You're right. And
well, the only character, like I said, we've mentioned this before on the show. The only character I think that is so resilient that he can take the ins and outs of multiple creative teams trying to reinvent him has been Batman.
Right.
Whereas maybe a guy like Captain America isn't a strong enough title to take. I don't know.
But you know what? Okay, you raise a good point because really. Do characters need to be reinvented all the time? Why can't you just have a good story? Why can't you reinvent the situation the character's in rather than trying to reinvent the actual character? Which is what happens a lot with Batman. They do try to reinvent the character, make him grittier, make him darker, all of a sudden make him have a family, have him fall in love, all of a sudden he's getting married, all these kind of things. Why not just have a different story, a different arc, a different villain,
right?
Rather than trying to reinvent the character.
I would go the villain route because a strong character is like Batman, let's say. You have, I'm going to say, a dozen great villains, top A-list villains.
Totally.
So you devote an arc of 5 issues to each villain.
Yep.
And that's 60 issues.
Totally. And but you know what? I mean, as we've talked about before on the show, you know, in order to have a great hero, you need to have great villains.
Right.
Right. And so, I mean, you think about the greatest characters out there. They've got pretty much the greatest villains. So you think about, you know, Batman's got great villains. Superman has okay villains, but Superman's an anomaly because he was the first one.
Right.
Right? So he has okay villains. Spider-Man has amazing villains.
Right.
Amazing Spider-Man has
get the pun there. He is sharp, this kid.
But then you get a character like, say, the Flash, which is just an okay character for a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
But he's got great villains.
Great villains.
Which elevates his status as a character. Right.
Right.
You know,
does Green Lantern have a villain other than Sinestro?
He's got a couple. Star Sapphire.
Star Sapphire,
is that
really?
Name? Isn't it? Isn't it Star Sapphire?
His old flame.
His old flame.
Okay.
Yeah, Carol Danvers, yeah.
It's not...
Carol Danvers?
Carol Ferris, right. Sorry.
Yeah. Those Carols get around.
You know, but there's not a whole lot.
Yeah, but what is the... Flash got the Rogues Gallery, famous.
Yeah.
And then Spider-Man and his Sinister Six. These are the big... I mean, Captain America's got classics like Batroc the Leaper and maybe Pacepot Pete.
Come on, he's got Red Skull.
Did he just say Pacepot Pete?
Pacepot Pete is the greatest Marvel villain ever.
Is he? I beg to differ.
He covers the heroes in white glue.
Oh my goodness.
Well, he does, unfortunately. But later on, he became the Trapster.
Oh, the Trapster.
Because for some reason, Pacepot Pete just wasn't cool. apparently.
I don't know. That's pretty cool, if you ask me.
Anyways, Captain America 700's got a bit of nice rogues gallery in it, or, you know, team-ups, whatever you want to call it. It's got Hulk and the Thing on the cover, and there you go. Comes out today.
Man, that's a good-looking book.
That's a good-looking book right there. And note, guys, the Thing is on the cover. You wouldn't have seen that 6 months ago.
That's true. Very true. Yeah, great point.
Hey, that's available at your local comic book shop today.
All right. Next up, we've got Exiles number 1, and this is... Exiles was a comic that came out a long time ago, and they brought it back. And I guess the biggest character that came out of that was Blink. She was a character that teleported in and out of things, you know. I'm not going to pretend to say that I've read this comic. I've looked through it. It looks interesting. If you like, it's, you know, the problem is they're new characters that I don't care about. Right. But there are a lot of people that are younger that do like these characters, maybe even grew up with these characters, but I don't really know them very well. You know, it's got... You know, it's got the new Ms. Marvel. It's got Blink. It's got, I don't know, it looks like, I think it's supposed to be Valkyrie, the new Valkyrie.
Valkyrie.
You know, the one based from the Thor movie. Characters I don't really care about. So,
hey, listen. Listen, you know, just because Chris Owen doesn't care about it doesn't mean you don't. Go into your local comic book shop and check out Exiles number one. And hey, if you blink, you won't miss it.
Ah, see what he did there?
Yeah. Ooh, that
was... He's got a million of them, folks. All right, next up from DC, we've got The Immortal Men.
Hmm?
Yes, that's right. The Immortal Men. Now, this is the new book that Jim Lee is supposedly working on. You know, I say that supposedly because, you know, it says here storytellers, and Jim Lee is the first name, but then it has Ryan Benjamin and James Tynion IV. Are they... also pencilers? Are they inkers, writers? I mean, it has inkers, two inkers here, Scott Williams and Richard Friend. I guess my problem is Jim Lee really doing much of anything?
Yeah, or is he just lending his name to the book?
The art clearly switches from one panel to the next as to who it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's The Immortal Man. It's one of those new books, just like that, what was it called? I want to say Rampage, but Damage.
Oh, those new FF takeoffs?
Yeah, it was all part of that. And there's a gimmick here where you can... it's got like a weird gatefold cover thing.
Oh, that's really one of those centerfold center spreads. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Scott, like the old Playboys, remember?
No.
No?
that's the right answer, by the way. Anyways, it's
remember, not... Remember one of my favorite Happy Days episodes... was when Richie, Ralph, and Potsy found an old Playboy.
Oh, yeah.
And so, of course, we're looking at them looking at the Playboy.
Right.
Right? And so they get to the centerfold, and they fold it out into the three-page holding it up. And all, you know, the young boys are all wide-eyed looking at this girl, obviously girl, naked girl on the centerfold. Potsy Weber comes up with the best line. He's looking, and they're all like saucer-eyed, and Potsy goes, "Whoa. Imagine her in a sweater."
you do love your Happy Days, don't you?
Ah, come on, I do. Yeah. I get a lot of my material from there.
Yeah.
Hey,
unfortunately,
Immortal Men, number one, is at your local comic book shop. Check that out.
Yeah. All right, and so next up we've got this one's. You know, I don't want to say it's for the kiddies, but it's rated teen.
Is it for the kiddies?
Well, not really.
Did Art Beltazar draw it?
It looks like it's kind of kid-like, but it's not really. It's rated for teens. It's Justice League of America, but it's got kind of a fun look to it. I don't know what you want to call it. Anyways, it's got all your favorites. You know, Batman, the Atom, and the list goes down from there. The Ray.
Is the Atom still around in DC?
Ice.
He shrunk in popularity.
Shrunk, yeah. The Atom is still around. I don't know. Sure, it looks good, I guess. I don't know. It's
That's the new
Vixen, maybe he's in it. I don't know.
Well, Chris, that was a pretty concise, defined description of this book.
You know
book.
What? It I looks really boring
liked,
to me.
I liked the way you dissected this book. Hey, The Dawn of Time, Justice League of America, number 28.
All right.
Is at your local comic book shop today.
Next up. We've got Ninjak.
By Valiant. I remember that.
By Valiant. Wasn't Ninjak the one that was started by Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti, I think, or something like that? Anyway, yeah.
Wasn't there a TV show, Ninjak, where the guy was bald?
That was Kojak.
Kojak.
Right.
Kojak.
Here's looking at you, kid.
No, that wasn't Kojak.
Oh, sorry.
Who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby?
Kojak.
With the lollipop. For the lollipop, yeah. You know what? I got to say that... the art is cool. I do like the art. It's by that guy Juan Jose Rip, who used to do a lot of work for Avatar. You probably recognize his work from the Avatar books. If you looked at it the inside, you probably look at it and say, "Oh, I've seen that art somewhere." I do like the art. It's interesting. It's a fresh style. And Christos Gage does the writing. Christos Gage has come a long way. I remember reading a couple of his early miniseries. He did a Deadshot miniseries that I really enjoyed, and he's done a lot of work on lots of books. I do like his writing, so I do recommend getting Ninjak. Actually,
hey, I don't expect any of us to know. But that Sony deal that they made with Valiant for the properties, is Ninjak in that? I don't know.
Well, it's part of Valiant, I would think it is. Yeah, it's all their properties, right? So,
oh, okay. Sony, remember they're trying to develop films around the Valiant universe and stuff? Yeah. So.
Which that could eventually become a thing, right?
That's wonderful.
Yeah. All they mention is the Bloodshot one.
Yeah. Vin Diesel. Yeah, Vin Diesel is going to be Bloodshot. So if you have Bloodshot number one, speculate now.
Nice. Hey, Ninjak number six is at your local comic book shop today.
All right, and last up, I have to talk about this because to me, for us old guys, this is a milestone. This is now a milestone. Mad Magazine has gone back, and now they're rebooting again at number one.
Oh.
So Mad Magazine is restarting.
Know if I like that.
Well, but here's why you're going to like it.
Why am I going to like it?
You're going to like it because not only do they recognize William Gaines as the founder in this one, which maybe they were doing before, I don't really know.
Uh-huh.
But more importantly, to my eyes, Bill Morrison is now the executive editor and vice president of this Mad Magazine comic. Now, you might be asking yourself, who the heck is Bill Morrison?
Hey, Chris.
And what's he done for me lately?
Now, who is Bill Morrison?
So Bill Morrison was actually the art... I could be getting the titles wrong, but he's one of the art directors for Futurama. So he's worked on The Simpsons. Uh-huh. He's been around a long time. He's a highly creative individual. Now he's sort of steering the ship for the new Mad Magazine. And really, I think it's important that Mad Magazine has a fresh start. I think Mad Magazine is something that...
Yeah, but Chris, is Mad Magazine...
Relevant? But why? But it hasn't been. But why? And precisely why it needs a fresh start.
But maybe the media and the times and are stacked against it. Scott, I think Scott probably edited all my spelling mistakes. But I talked about Mad Magazine number one a few months back on one of my undervalued spotlights, and I talked about how massively culturally influential that magazine was through the, let's say, 60s and 70s. It was one of the most widely read magazines. The satire was political. The satire poked fun at also popular culture, at Hollywood and stuff. And it was like a reference point to so many great comedians of the 80s and 90s. The reference, Mad Magazine was just you have no idea how much cultural influence that magazine had on the United States of America and general pop culture, by extension. Right.
And I think what you're saying, I think you're right. I think it loses something in today's culture because of our, we're all plugged in now. But at the same time, I think it's relevant because they're restarting and they're really trying to restart a new franchise, has been an institution in magazines.
This isn't something that's shoehorned into a comic store either, but this is a test whether the print market is in fact living enough to support a humor magazine.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the field, at the grocery store, in the
Why not? Right? Bookstore. Yeah, why not?
All right, well, let's give it a go. Hey, Mad Magazine number one, check that out at your local comic book shop. And Chris has just taken a couple, but trust me, there are hundreds, if not hundreds more, at your local comic book shop. So go in and check, peruse the new this week.
All right, let's. Why don't we have a quick musical interlude here? We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about industry news and what's going on in the industry. But for right now, let's talk a little bit. Let's hear a little bit about the Doctor Who theme.
Oh, Wonderful stuff, Chris. I really, 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 really enjoy that song. What's it called
again? That's the Doctor Who theme.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I really like it, by the way. Hey, listen, that takes us into Industry News. As Industry News is brought to you by Mad Magazine number
Mad
one.
Mad Magazine, yeah.
Needs all the health it can get, so go out and
you know, I'm gonna buy
check
it.
It out.
I'm going to buy it. I want to read it. It looks funny. It's
Chris is going to buy it. I'm going to buy it. You know, Scott, are you going to buy it?
Absolutely.
You know Scott's going to buy it.
You know what I especially liked about it?
What?
I especially like the fact that...
The guy's
that
giving us the finger on the cover?
Kind of giving you the finger on the cover, but it's got like comic book type stuff in here,
uh-huh.
as well as it's got... what do you call it? It's got... Remember they used to do starchy...
I
you
do.
Know, that was an old Mad Magazine thing. They brought that back, and I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Can you let me see that thing for a second? How about the back cover? Remember when you had to fold the back cover?
Yeah, the fold-ins. Yes.
Yeah, they don't have that. They don't have
that.
Oh yeah, they do. I think. Mad fold-in on the inside back cover. I'm looking for.
He said people stopped folding it because they didn't want to. They didn't want to devalue their
Brand. Yeah, that is so sad.
One of the best parts about it. You know what? Yeah.
You can buy there's a deluxe hardcover and a slipcase. That's all the foldouts.
Now, if you were to buy that, would you want to fold all of them?
Or are they pre-folded? That's what I wanted to know.
They better be pre-folded. That'd be great. Yeah, if they're pre-folded, then you wouldn't have any worries.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the Minty Boys, wouldn't want to fold that thing, and it would take all the enjoyment away. Hey, listen, let's dive into industry news.
Dive in.
So let's talk about this phenomenon.
Phenomenon. Phenomenon.
Chris, Action 1000. Action 1000 is coming out next week.
Yes.
And somewhere I read online that the pre-orders for the dumb book are past 500,000 already.
Half a million.
And it's like a $7.99 US cover book.
$7.99 cover.
It's amazing. Amazing. It's like a thick-ass book.
It is. You know what?
And,
so
that's a lot of money DC's making off this one book.
Well,
that's my point.
You know, it's like $4 million,
that's
right?
Right. Yeah. That's good math right
it's
there.
Good math.
So... the thing is the weird part about this book is there's, you know, what, 12 different covers? 10?
There's
one
a
for
lot.
Each, one from the 30s and 40s
so,
and 50s
yeah, so
and 60s and
there's
70s
There's a bunch
80s,
of artists
90s,
that,
1000.
Old-timey artists that they've kind of gathered up to recreate, or not recreate, but create covers.
Eras.
Right? So you get, as you said, in 30s, 40s,
your 50s. Your Kurt Swan type.
But you know,
I still don't
understand. There's one there that really I just don't get.
What's that?
And that's the Jim Steranko one.
Uh-huh.
Why is Jim Steranko... I get he's an old guy, but why is he doing... He's never... It's, to my
Superman.
Knowledge, he's never drawn Spider-Man or
Superman.
He contributed a pinup to Superman. I think it was Action 400.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
He's in.
It appeared in the DC portfolio.
Now hold on. Is that now? And I also did hear a story. I think there was a Batman black and white story that he did. At least he's doing some DC books. However, apparently the story apparently goes that he didn't want to do it because he wasn't going to get paid enough, and so Darwin Cook, rest in peace, paid the remainder of what he was going to get paid to Jim Steranko so that he would actually do the book. So So you know what.
It's wonderful of Darwin Cook, not so wonderful of Jim Steranko, who, by the way, we should point out is, I think he's coming to the Niagara Comic Con this year.
I think you're right. I think he is, yes.
I think, because he doesn't go to the big Toronto show.
No, he does the Big Apple Comic Con.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's one in New Jersey he's been doing lately.
Right. But the Niagara Con is the Canadian con that he does. It's a pretty cool place
to go. I think
he's
done Chicago, I think, or something like that. Yeah. I remember meeting him a couple times and...
Okay, so he's got a cover. So there are all these covers to Action Comics.
So again, let me ask you this.
Ask me.
Is this something you should invest in?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think you can never guess which of the artist covers is going to be the one that takes off. You can never guess.
We want to support the Michael Cho cover, of course.
Of course, nice Canadian kid.
So I'm going to say that if...
but there's a variant, though. I think there's a 1 in 1,000 store variant.
Okay.
And that's the one I think that will obviously be worth money.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to ask you. And you know what, Scott, I want to have your opinion on this, too.
I'm ready.
Are variant covers really worth anything? Like, I enjoy buying them because I like the artwork.
Right.
But are they really... Are you ever going to make money and
I'm telling
get your
you,
money
I
back?
I was a poo-pooer of variant covers forever. Just a poo-pooer. But I've noticed in the last year, let's say, on the back issue market, that it is a massively vibrant and busy back issue market on variant covers that are holding their value. Lots and lots of variant covers are holding their value and even increasing in value. I'll give you an example of that J. Scott Campbell, the Venom, Gwen Stacy Venom cover of 678, I'm going to guess.
Right.
It's like where she's kind of being taken over by Venom. And it was like a 1 in 500 or a 1 in 100. That's flipping things, getting, you know, $1,500, and it's still going up. The Ditko Spider-Man 700 variant
that shot
up to $1,000, you know, a month after.
Right, right, right.
It's still at $1,000, if not more, and that's been years.
Right.
Right, so I've noticed a lot more.
Because I know that there's a lot of books out there, like, you know, Adam Hughes does a lot of variant covers, you know, and so there's a Harley Quinn variant cover by Adam Hughes that, you know, is $100 right now.
Right.
And, you know, I'm just worried, are these things going to go down in value? Scott, what's your opinion on this stuff?
Well, it seems like the buying public right now is buying for covers, right? I talk to people I know and they say, oh, yeah, the people are buying CGC Slab books off Instagram, Golden Age books, Silver Age books. They're buying it for the cover.
They're
never going to be opened.
Right.
They're buying it as a showpiece.
Yeah.
So are these variant covers any different? I mean,
unfortunately,
I think we come from a mindset where we'd never spend our money on a cover. The story's the same inside.
Yeah.
Would you spend $5 versus $100? I wouldn't.
Right. Whereas the market right now is cover driven.
Right.
But not just cover driven, they're also statistically driven. So
interesting. So, I mean,
it's scarcity, right? It's scarcity.
Yeah.
So if that variant cover is a 1 in 100 and whatever, at 9.8, there are only 27 of them, that has true scarcity.
Right.
Right? And if the cover is something that everybody wants.
Yeah.
And the scarcity is there. So you have scarcity and you have high demand. What's that equal?
Wait, is this an economics course
all
of a
sudden? Sure is. It sure is. 101.
Mike Hollison, are you listening to this? This sounds like an overvalued Overstreet post to me.
Okay, so you and I, Walt, were talking about the fact that old books these days are now pretty much postage stamps, right?
Yes.
Because nobody's cracking them open to read them.
No, sir.
You're buying the book based on possibly investments, but more often than not, because you like the cover.
Right.
Right? So if what you're telling me is true from both of you, really this is no different from somebody buying a Golden Age book.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely the same thing.
So does that mean that, I know you guys, neither of you have a crystal ball, but would you think that based on what you're telling me now, that this is a good indication of how the market's going to go 20 years from now if things are going to be continuing on? Like
right. Obviously, 20 years from now is a long stretch, but I honestly think I'm projecting 2 years from now, and I think it's going to be the same, if not stronger.
Right.
Just based on, like what Scott says, the Instagram stuff and these younger people coming into the market and wanting the iconic covers. And it's funny how you can't even predict which ones, but some covers end up taking a life of their own, like taking on a life of their own.
Right.
And they become bigger than anybody expects them to be because for some reason, they're that cover,
the
cover.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, in the Golden Age, we can point to things like Spirit 22and Brenda Starr 14.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there are a lot of great covers, but, you know, if you're going to make a coffee table book, these are going to be in right?
Yeah.
And there are current covers like that as well.
Right.
Right? And people are really, really drawn to the cover. You know what really helps a cover, what I've noticed, is let's say the cover introduces a villain.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
If the villain is on the cover...
Right.
That's great.
Like Harley Quinn and
like
Batman
Harley
Adventures
Quinn.
12.
Right.
Right.
If the villain is like, oh, this is the first appearance of Harley Quinn, and it's got the Riddler on the cover,
then there's
just not as strong as the demand, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because you know,
And so this has a couple of things have to happen to it. One is obviously the cover has to be strong. Whoever renders the cover has to be strong.
Right.
Has to have great eye appeal. It has to have, you know, the principle on the cover. But the second thing you added to it, a guy asked me a while back, it goes, oh my god, well, did you see House of Secrets 92-98 got $45,000 for a 9.8 House 92?
Right.
How the heck can it be worth that much?
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
I go, well, that one's got a lot of the important check marks you need for value going for it.
Right.
Once it's got scarcity of grade.
Yeah.
So a 9.8 is a house 92. That I'm making up a number, but it's somewhere like 12 or 15 or 20.
Right.
Whereas, let's say a Hulk 181, there's over 100.
Right.
It also has the introduction of a brand new character that's popular. And he's on the cover.
Yeah.
And it also has an iconic artist attached to
Bernie
the cover.
Bernie Wrightson.
So there's, you got a great artist, you got a great cover, you got a first appearance, you got scarcity of grade, you got a lot of things you're checking off that are an important part of a formula that equates to value.
Right. What are your thoughts on that, Scott?
Well, and that's Louise Simonson on the cover.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Right. So you have another little urban legend type thing going on in the cover as well.
It's interesting with the variant covers, because there's so many variant covers being released for the books. I don't even see how you could possibly predict what book is going to go up. There was a hardcover release.
I bet you some guys have eyes. Girls and guys, whoever. They'll have an eye for which one.
But there was a hardcover just released, a book about DC variant covers, and it is now sold out. It sold out in 2 weeks.
Really? Right.
So it's interesting that
the variant cover book about the book about variant covers is sold out.
Yeah.
Not the variant covers themselves, probably, but
amazing.
That's crazy. Interesting. Wow. Well, you know what? Interesting concept. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of variant covers out there. You know which ones I really used to like is DC did them for a few years. They would choose a theme for a month, and they would rotate that theme, different themes. One month it was Darwin Cook did all the covers, and then another month it was all Harley Quinn. Another month it was all something. I really liked the Darwin Cook year, or a month, I should say. That was great. Comics 1000.
Action Comics 1000. Now, what we don't know, what you guys didn't know, guys.
What's that?
Is that DC's marketing department, because I'm connected, I have guys down there.
You're in the know.
I'm in the know. And they had a whole bunch of stuff planned for the 1000. They wanted to run with 1000. They wanted to run with Superman. They had a whole bunch of things in the can that ended up not being produced. And he sent me a list.
Oh, really?
Of the really cool things that were being planned.
Like what are some of these things?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now.
Oh, okay, cool.
They had plans for Superman Sudoku 1000.
Really?
1000 Sudoku puzzles.
Oh, that sounds terrible. That sounds terrible.
That's why I didn't print.
Were the numbers shaped to Superman?
That's why I didn't print.
They had Clark Kent's 1000 best disguises.
Oh, I like that.
That didn't go anywhere.
Did he even have 1000? I thought it was just.
I guess that's probably. They probably ran.
Maybe,
they had the meeting.
1000 hats.
Yeah. Look, JB, I got an idea. And then they started coming up with. And then they stopped at one.
Did they ever tell him why the idea was terrible?
But you know what? It didn't make the
cover. Okay, listen.
I'm just the messenger.
Yeah, I know. It's true. Yeah.
1,000 curse words to describe kryptonite by Superman.
I like that. Hey, did you know that there are certain words that they can no longer... Well, I don't know if it's true anymore. There was a while there. They wouldn't print certain words in... I mean, certain actual, real, printable words.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't print in comics. Like, for example, in the...
Sudoku?
In Sudoku. They wouldn't print the word flick, if somebody was turning on the light switch.
Yeah, flick, because it can be... if the ink smudges, you're in trouble.
Misconstrued,
yeah. Oh, they had Superman's 1,000 Polaroids of Power Girl.
Oh, so he's a stalker now?
Apparently, that's why I guess it didn't look right.
I'd buy that.
Yeah, so would I. Yeah. It was, by the way, it was a swimsuit edition. So they had another one. It was kind of like an album, and they had Superman Sings Gershwin, 1,000 Unforgettable Melodies.
Nice. That's a long CD.
That's a really long CD. This is a long bit right here, but they had, hold on here. They had... 1,000 Superman jokes.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
With punchlines like, just don't call me late for dinner, or that's what she said. Or
all the classics.
Or that's not the steel railing you're holding. What else did they have, Chris? Let me see here. Boy, you want this to end soon, don't you?
No, no, it's good. It's great. Keep going.
Oh, 1,000 comic titles better than Action Comics.
Oh, I like that.
Mm. Oh, wait a minute. No, I got that as a misprint. That was a Marvel project.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. I got that mixed up. What else they had? Oh, The Man of Steel's 1,000 Girlfriends.
Oh.
The swimsuit issue.
It's very similar to the Power Girl one.
Pretty well. Yeah. That's why I separated them with about five in between. Yeah. A lot of LLs in that one, by the way.
Yeah.
And let's see if I have one more. Let's see. And then the one really cool one I liked, I'd get the 1,000 failed Lois Lane marriage ploys.
That was a
pretty cool one. So anyway, that was a list, and they were trying to get some stuff going.
It didn't seem to work, did it?
No, it didn't. Neither did the bit, really.
I can't imagine why these two.
Neither did the bit.
You know what? Hey, you know, it's good that they have the inside scoop there.
You know,
from
when
DC.
He sent it to me, they read funny.
It sounded great. You know what? I'm sure it was great.
All right. So, Chris, why don't you help me out right now?
And get off of this, and we'll... Yeah. Get to we're gonna have a musical interlude here. Let's what do you want to hear?
Oh, did I mention the 1,000
Superman?
The 1,000 Superman recipes. That was another one.
You know what? Let's we're not gonna talk about. I don't know what you're talking about now.
Superman 1,000, the Knights Templar Superman.
I don't know what that is.
The year 1,000.
You know what? I think you probably just gave away a good comic book idea there. I'm sure some sort of like Mark Miller type guys go, Superman, Superman and the Knights Templar.
Hey, JB, I was listening to a podcast the other day.
I don't know why, but hey, you know what? Just for you, because we're talking about Superman, let's have a little bit of the old Superman here.
That's wonderful stuff, Kristen. Great, great, great segue out of the Superman thing. Hey, industry news part deux is brought to you by Kryptonite Club Soda.
Kryptonite Club Soda.
Don't let the green hue fool you. It's bubbly at its best.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That actually sounds like it's actually like a real thing.
It is.
Yeah. Good job.
All right. Listen, hey guys. So. I was on that internet thing.
Yep.
And
I've heard of it.
Yeah. And my kid goes, "Hey, Dad, there's a cool Solo trailer." I was like, "What's Solo trailer?"
Solo.
I go, is that like a warehouse
find?
Well, I don't know. I thought Solo would be more like when you anyway. So it's the Star Wars thing.
Han Solo,
right?
Han Solo.
So I got to check this out. And so I watched the Lucasfilm Solo trailer that's online right now, and I really liked it.
Did you?
I did.
And that says a lot, because normally you don't like anything.
I'm like Mikey on the Life cereal commercial.
So true.
Don't like anything.
I'm going to have to say that I have not seen the trailer. Scott, have you seen it?
No, I have not seen the trailer. Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful. So what visually, and this is, I guess, the key to any Lucasfilm Star Wars type thing, visually it harkens to the first three movies, kind of the visuals, Chewbacca, the way Han Solo's dressed, the taverns that he frequents, Lando Calrissian looks like a young Lando Calrissian.
You know what? Okay, so what I've seen, I haven't seen the
trailer alert. Beep, boop, bop, beep.
That's a trailer alert?
Spoiler alert.
Okay. Oh, is that what I...
Spoiler, not trailer alert. Trailer alert.
We need a new one. Trailer alert.
Wow, that's...
Did you like that?
Magical.
That's what we do here on the station.
Hey, when you were kids, when the big tractor trailer comes, did you ever, like, do your arm? Yeah, and you're like, hey, tractor trailer man, pull the horn down. Hey. And he goes,
that you're all happy. Really well to a podcast. Yeah.
So yeah. People can see it from all
over.
Well,
they can see it. They can see it.
So... I haven't seen the new trailer, but I have seen other the teaser, or whatever you want to call it. And I'm going to say that I'm undecided about, what's his name? The guy that plays Han Solo. Aldrich, or whatever his name is.
Aldrich.
However, is... whatever his name is, I don't know.
That's what the ladies say about him anyway.
He's the straight man. Everybody else is entertaining.
Anyways,
much like Walt.
I do really like the way that Lando Calrissian looks.
Yeah,
He looks like a young Lando.
Lando Calrissian.
Right? Looks awesome.
Yeah.
Looks awesome.
So guys.
Guys.
Here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
This movie is dependent on one thing and one thing only.
What's that?
Is our ability to embrace this young actor as Han Solo. That's it.
Okay, so...
That's it. Nothing else.
So
because once we buy into this young man being Han Solo, the rest is Star Wars.
Okay, I have one other thing to say about this.
Whatever.
Just hold on.
Go ahead.
I've heard through that grapevine thing that the actor who's portraying young Han Solo...
Right.
Is not the greatest of actors.
Neither was Harrison Ford. He was all right. He overacted.
He was nominated for Academy Award.
What? Not in Star Wars.
Well, no, of course not. In Witness.
In Witness. Fair enough.
I'm just saying.
But he even overacted in Witness.
Okay, but he's still...
He overacts.
He's a good actor.
He's from the William Shatner School of
Acting. He's not.
Yes, he is.
You're crazy.
No, I'm not. He overacts.
Listen.
What do you know about modern agriculture anyway?
Listen, Linda.
Here's the thing.
I'm going to say that, yes, you're right, that we do need to have a certain amount of suspension of disbelief in thinking that this new guy is Han Solo.
No, we don't need a disbelief. We need a buy-in.
Whatever you want to call it, sure. Buy-in. We're going to buy into this.
We need a buy-in.
Okay.
We need to accept him and embrace
him. As long as he's a good actor.
I don't think that's the issue.
Oh.
He's going to be a good enough actor.
Scott, help me out here.
I really don't see a side to this argument. I don't know. Does he have to be? Do we have to buy in Han Solo?
Yes, we do.
If the supporting cast is amazing,
no,
if we love young Lando.
No, no,
then why wouldn't we want to
see
a Lando
movie next? He's too central.
He's dead in the other movie.
Okay, he's too much of a focal point.
Are you going to buy in that it's no longer Peter Mayhew playing Chewbacca?
It isn't.
Yeah, he retired.
I didn't know
that.
Yeah. That guy looked just like him.
Just saying.
He sounded just like him, too.
So you know what? You're already halfway there.
There's your suspension of belief or disbelief. I don't know what it is.
I'm telling you, it was a spitting image, Chris. Oh, man.
Yeah, there's some Swedish guy playing Chewbacca now.
The Swedish chef.
A new R2-D2. A Swedish chef, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I liked it, and I liked the, and you can see in the trailer the setups to all the stuff we know about Han Solo, right? And how it's setting up him being that gun runner,
scoundrel.
And rum runner, and scoundrel, and all that kind of stuff. So I liked seeing Woody Harrelson in it. We got to buy into this young guy being our Han Solo, and once we get past that. I mean, we've talked about this on this show a million times, and we cannot predict which superhero is so attached to the actor that the other ones don't work.
So true.
You can't
so
predict
true.
It.
No.
Like,
you're right.
So far, nobody's been able to do Conan because of Arnold.
Mm. Right.
So far, we don't know yet about Robert Downey and Iron Man. Right. But so far, six Batmans doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
One works, one does. So you don't know.
You're as my uncle used to say, you're half right but all wrong.
Wow, I feel like I know your uncle. You've told me that so many times.
So many times. My favorite line of the podcast, right. Absolutely.
All I'm saying is that there are certain characters that I think that there's probably a point where anybody can be replaced. I don't see. I'm sure eventually, you know, we can replace Robert Downey Jr. Eventually, we're going to replace Hugh Jackman. You know,
Hugh Jackman. Yeah, and like, I think he's easily replaced. But got another huge guy in there.
But there's a lot of people that said that no, nobody else could ever replace Sean Connery as James Bond.
Mm. And they didn't.
And they did though.
Well, but they did.
I like this. I like this Jimmy Craig guy.
Jimmy Craig. Johnny Craig.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, I like him. Well, guys, here's the thing.
So,
why can't I just say words?
Okay. Go on.
So, we are of the generation of Han Solo.
Yes.
We were young men when Han Solo came out.
Right.
You were a young child.
I was.
I was a young adolescent.
Yes.
And Scott, you were somewhere in between.
Yeah, I was five.
Uh-huh. So, we are of that.
Right.
Okay? Now, I'm gonna mention a name of another pop culture character that was introduced that is loved worldwide.
E.T.
No.
Oh.
Ben Affleck's Daredevil.
No. Oh. What's the guy that solves crimes in England there?
Sherlock Holmes.
Right. Thank you. Yep. Thank you. So Sherlock Holmes is the fictional character.
Right.
Okay.
Are you recycling material from two podcasts ago?
No.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Sherlock Holmes is the fictional character.
Right.
But my point is Sherlock Holmes is so old.
Right.
That multiple generations have enjoyed the fictional character Sherlock Holmes.
Absolutely.
And multiple portrayers of him because over time, people get old and
stuff like that. Yeah, sure.
So there's a norm multiple characters. We're with characters like Han Solo and with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, we're at that first salvo.
Right.
And so we're the ones that are resistant to change, I think. You and Scott.
Yeah.
I think the young kid watching that Han Solo movie ain't going to give two craps about Harrison Ford.
Yeah, you know what?
Because all he thinks about Harrison Ford is some leathery old guy in the recent movie. You follow me?
You know what? I'm gonna actually say that I think you're right on this one.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think a lot of it does have to do with the fact that we're a little more stubborn.
He's our guy. Yeah. Ford is our guy. It's like you said earlier with the Sean Connery thing. All those guys from that grew up in the 60s and 70s watching Sean Connery go, that's my Bond.
Yeah.
That's only Bond.
Not Roger Moore, not Timothy Dalton. Mm.
Right.
George Lazenby.
Not Jimmy Craig there. Right? Johnny Craig.
Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Okay, I agree. I totally agree.
I'm not used to you agreeing.
I know. Well, you know what?
I'm stumped for words
that's
now.
That's why I did it. I thought I'd stop.
Just to shut me up?
That's right.
It worked.
Listen.
All right, so I'm excited. I'm excited about the movie.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be a good movie. Of course, that comes out a month after Avengers Infinity War comes out. Have you guys got your tickets yet?
No.
Oh.
Oh, wait. No. The kids want to go, so we wait a few weeks.
Oh, okay. And then
try and catch it on like a Tuesday or something.
That's fair. Yeah.
What, on the Avengers one?
Yeah, we do this. We do it every time because we go on a Tuesday afternoon.
Well, it's expensive to go to a movie now, especially to bring a whole family. I mean, I only have my wife. We don't have kids or anything like that, right? So it's like a night out for us. But to bring a whole family, like, you know, it's a lot of money.
Especially a truckload of
Vanderplugs. Right?
My goodness.
Yeah.
Hey.
They're the three of us. Thank you. Okay. My youngest and my wife aren't interested.
They're not?
No,
really?
Just me and the two oldest.
Oh, so it's not the caravan going.
No. They like the superhero movies. They like a lot of things.
What the heck happened there? Hold on. Sorry, we had a little.
We had a caller come in.
Malfunction there.
Yeah. All right, guys. Let's. What time? How much time? We're running out of time. We're good.
We got time.
Because I wanted to talk about this.
We got to talk to Scott about what he's doing.
So
right
what
now.
We have Scott as a guest. So we're going to give Scott a little bit of time here in the forum. Now, Scott, first of all, you have to tell me about. I know that you have a podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I had the from Comic Book Daily.
Yep.
I'm sure every listener here reads Comic Book Daily diligently, and they will see that there's all the other articles from Comic Book Daily, and then my articles, which are a complete opposite of everything else.
They're not a complete opposite.
It's pretty much an opposite. Yeah. So, right now, everybody else talks about Silver Age books and collecting, and I talk about European
new stuff,
European non-superhero.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, that stuff.
I don't actually read new comics.
Well, great talking to Scott.
Chris, hey, you know, you belong on this show.
You're one of us.
You're one of us.
No, listen, you know what, Scott, I will say, okay, I didn't mean to cut you off here. I do, believe it or not, I do peruse your posts. You have web arted every week. Mm-hmm. Where you talk about just things that you found on the internet and yep. Different types of artwork that you found. I have read your posts about with the what do you call it, artist edition, things like that. So, and now, what is your podcast mainly about?
So I decided that this will segue into later, but I wasn't going to collect original art anymore because it was getting too expensive.
Right.
And then these artist editions started to come out, and the first one was in 2010. And I thought, hey, here's the complete Rocketeer. I love the Rocketeer. I'm never going to be able to afford this artwork.
Yeah.
It's hard. You can't even collect it.
Right.
So here's a beautiful book. I think it was $75.
Right.
So I thought I'm going to buy this, and then slowly they started to roll out, and I started to pick up more and more of them. And then I think about 2015, I thought, hey, I'm going to make this a focus of what I'm writing.
Right.
And I'm going to buy every artist edition from every publisher.
Cool.
And I'm going to review them all.
Yep.
So I started that on Comic Daily, started to do little reviews, and I thought, you know, I think I can make a podcast of this as well. I'll talk about sales, I'll talk about reviews, and so I just do a 30-minute podcast. I've done 17 episodes now.
Right, right.
And then in July, I thought, I've got enough material from the artist editions. I'm going to take it off Comic Book Daily. I made a separate website called the Artist Edition Index, it's at aeindex.org.
Yep.
Might as well plug it.
And why not?
That's the complete, that's everything. So that's the podcast, that's all the reviews. And I've gotten, it's a small market. So the average artist edition sells between 300 and 1,500 copies.
Wow, is that all, eh?
That's it.
That's not so very much. Yeah.
So the publishers barely even make a profit on these things.
Or so why do they do it?
If they do. There's 91 have been published so far.
Uh-huh.
And really?
Yeah.
Scott, can I ask, do you have 91?
I do have all of them, yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, is there ever a second print of these things?
Yes, there's been a few second prints. There's been the Steranko Nick Fury book has uh-huh. been the second printed. There was a Marvel Covers
that went to second print. I have the Marvel Covers one, yeah.
So it's very rare that they go to second print, though. There's just not enough... I think based on what they have to print to make the book somewhat profitable,
uh-huh.
and then... the inventory that they keep, I find John Byrne's Fantastic Four Artist Edition came out 5 years ago and it just sold out from the distributor.
Oh, really?
So there's a long life to these books. They're almost, you could say, evergreen, not really.
Yeah,
right.
Classical.
Right.
Yeah. Evergreen, right. They're good long life and they do have a great...
Now, what's the schedule like this year for Artist Editions? Is that part of the industry... still in a growth mode, because obviously it's grown since that initial first one or two, or is it kind of stabilized, or is it decreasing, or?
So the IDW started the market. Scott Dunbier is the editor of special projects at IDW. It was his idea to start the books.
Uh-huh.
IDW has led that, and they stick to a schedule of one. They solicit one per month.
Oh,
one
do
per
they month? Really? Okay. Yeah, right. So it's interesting that, I mean, believe it or not, I didn't know you were coming on the show today. Walt let me know earlier this afternoon. But yesterday I was looking at my Marvel Covers book, and I just kept on staring at the cover, and I kept on seeing the IDW publisher name on the front. And it boggles my mind that why doesn't Marvel do something like this, or is it just not profitable enough for them? What do you think?
I've asked all the publishers if they will release... these publishers of these books, I think there's eight publishers in total right now, not one of them will release their print runs.
Really?
And none of them will release real sales numbers. And I've discovered slowly over time that one of the reasons for that is they pay the artist royalties on these books.
Do they really?
So I believe they don't publish the sales numbers so that there's no conflict.
They don't have to.
Oh, yeah, well.
I don't think they're trying to rip anybody off, but I just think there's no conflict between the publisher and the artist. And there's lots of rumors on the internet. Why isn't there a Neil Adams artist edition before from any publisher? And apparently it's because Neil Adams wants a higher rate than what everybody else is getting for these books.
Right. But could you imagine a Neil Adams, like the Batman era?
Well, it's also then... So this.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So you take an example. You want to collect one of these books. So you've got an artist edition. They average 144 pages. Maybe there's six complete stories.
Yeah.
So nobody... I can't say nobody, but very rarely does anybody have six complete stories. So the editor of these books is hunting and searching maybe for months or years to gather the material.
Okay, maybe I think it's important to note for our listeners that maybe aren't too sure what an artist edition is. It's basically the original artwork without editing, without colorization.
After inks. It's after inks, so with the lettering.
With the lettering, yeah. But it's raw, right?
Right,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So
you can see the whiteouts, you can see the corrections, you can see...
So it might be, it's probably hard, I mean, especially covers, I would imagine, have been sold to, you know, one cover goes to one guy, a page goes to another guy, a splash page goes to another guy, and then another cover from the next book goes to a different person. So to be able to sort of horn in and rein in all those different pages from all these different people, I would imagine would be an extremely difficult task. From what I'm gathering, I don't know, what do you...
It's all time, right? How much time can they... there was a story that Scott Dunbury was collecting a different art for a different book, and the guy said, hey, do you want to scan my complete Enemy Ace issues while you're here?
Really?
So he didn't have the idea that he was going to do an Enemy Ace book, but here's a guy with a couple issues. So he's going to start the next book.
Yeah, interesting.
But some of the most popular... Well, Walt Simonson, there's been more artist editions from Titan, IDW, a few other publishers. There's one coming out from Dynamite. And the reason is that is because Walt Simon keeps all his original artwork.
Right.
So really?
Just has to come to him and say, hey, we'd like to do these. And I think they work out some sort of royalty. But he's got all his artwork. So if anybody wanted to do Walt Simonson, he's ready to go.
Right.
But when you do something like a Batman The Dark Knight Returns, which is, I think, the most popular one that came out, it's from Graffiti Designs.
Yeah.
And there's something that took a few years to gather all the artwork. And then there's still all these books. There's normally pages still missing.
It's interesting. You know, it's a great concept. I mean, I only have a couple myself. I think it's awesome that you have 91. Wow.
I don't know. I mean, we're running out of time, guys. And what I wanted to do to get to on this show is to touch a little bit about the original art world, because both of you guys are big fans of original art. Scott, obviously, with the artist edition, but you're also a collector of original art.
Yeah,
It would have been great to just hear you guys just review the whole scene at Comic Cons, because Artist Alley, I mean, I've been talking to artists lately, and they've been bitching and complaining about what Artist Alleys are turning into.
Whoa.
Now, you guys used to frequent Artist Alley a decade ago, a decade and a half ago, trying to get artists to do stuff. And I mean, that's original art. It's not published original art,
no.
But it's an important part of comic book conventions.
Oh, totally.
That's changing dramatically.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Scott and I used to trade stories of, we'd go to conventions and meet up and say, oh, who'd you get a sketch from? Let me see it, and that kind of thing. And now we're saying, what one piece of artwork did you get? Because it's so expensive now. Like, you know, we used to go to conventions and we'd be able to pick up artwork for $20, $30, $40, even $100, right?
Right.
But now that same piece of artwork is $400, $1,000. Right?
Wow.
So
it's
and the lineups are still there, though.
Yep.
Yeah. But a minute and a half head sketch is $50 to $75 at a convention.
From who?
Well, it depends. So Howard Chaykin was just at a convention. It was $50 Canadian for a head sketch.
Right. And how long did that take him to do?
I think it took him about 3 minutes.
Wow.
But it's the...
And then
he does
a good rate. And those used to be free.
Yeah.
Does he talk to you? Does he get to say hi?
I talked extensively with Howard Chaykin, yes.
Okay.
He's quite a talker. So
right, all right. That's okay. And you know, some of those guys, they don't even look at you.
Okay, we only have a couple minutes left here. Scott, do you have one quick story that you can say about, or do you know of one? I mean, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. One quick story of a sketch that you got that you're either most proud of, or funny story, or anything like that.
I'll focus on my Darwin Cook sketches, because Darwin was awesome. He started conventions. You stood in line, you got your free head sketch.
Yeah.
And then gradually, he moved up, but as the other artists started charging more and more money, he sort of stayed, I think the max I ever paid for a full page Darwin Cook was $200.
Right.
He never really went above that. I got five over various conventions. I love them all.
Yeah,
and it's
that's
just
awesome.
You got to meet him, you got to talk to him. He was very personable.
Yeah.
It was just
great. Yeah, you know, and as we said, getting sketches over the year, it got more and more expensive. And now, some people might say, rightly so, you know, because now the artists are making more money and they weren't making money before. Mm. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, but...
Well, I used to get a Michael Cho sketch every time. I love Michael Cho. He's my favorite Canadian artist, living artist. I do like Darwin Cook more, but It's he's got, and I congratulate him because he's what he's getting now for his covers and his sketches is out of my price range.
Yeah,
right.
But
yeah.
That's awesome for him that he's come that far.
Yeah,
and he's able to earn that.
Yeah,
that's awesome for him. It's not so awesome for me as a collector, but I still can approach him and say, "Can you do this for me?" His rates have gone up a little for a head sketch or a torso, but they're still quite reasonable. He does it in color, but. These guys are making it.
They deserve it.
I think, from what I understood, I think some of these guys just necessity of eBay and stuff. Yeah. They had to. They hated seeing some of the artists I talked to. They hated seeing their $75 sketch up on eBay next week for $250.
Well,
they hated that.
They love
sketching for a fan, and they love sketching for kids. But it's that whole concept of you son of a gun, you. I'm gonna sketch this for you, and you're just gonna post on eBay tonight, right?
Yeah,
you know that whole dynamic there at cons as well.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I think we're out of time.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time here.
Goodness me. We want to thank Scott Vanderplug for being
a guest
tonight at the show.
It's been great.
We're on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station.